fingers on impact, cutting my knuckles, but the pain offers no relief.
"What has that cabinet ever done to you?" Farid asks me.
On the other side of the line, something clicks and a muffled voice reaches through the receiver. I still.
"I'm calling from Opportunity High," Farid says after giving our names. "We've heard gunshots."
He sounds so calm. The Farid I know, with his steadily teasing smile, has disappeared. I've never met this Farid. He articulates with care so his Afghan accent isn't as pronounced. Next thing, they'll mark him as a suspect. It wouldn't be the first time. Things happen in the school, and he gets questioned, even when it doesn't concern him at all. I hate it. It's so unfair. But at least it gives me some downtime.
The voice mumbles something unintelligible, and Farid answers. "We've heard several shots. I don't know if anyone is hurt."
He listens for a moment.
"No, no, we're not hurt."
I inch a little closer, but I can imagine the operator's next questions. "Where are you? How many of you are there?"
"Just the two of us. We're in the principal's office. The rest of the students and the teachers are in the auditorium for an assembly. The shots seem to come from over there.
We haven't been to the back of the school."
"No, we won't. We heard footsteps right before the shooting, but nothing else."
"Can you get out?" That's what I would ask, but the voice relays more information. It's almost comforting to listen. The low murmur from the phone line and the occasional gunfire in the distance are the only sounds. "We're safe here, I think."
"Yes, yes. The principal's office is in the administrative wing, on the east side of the building, first floor. The principal's parking spot is outside the window. It's clearly marked."
I smile without mirth. The principal's parking spot used to be toward the auditorium with the rest of the faculty, but my oldest brother once spray-painted Trenton's car pink after the two of them got into an, educational disagreement. She moved the parking spot so she could keep an eye on her new convertible.
"We've locked the door. We haven't seen or heard anyone else. We don't know what the situation is like in the rest of the building."
Gunshots. Threats. Deaths.
"We can get out through the window if we have to."
It won't have been the first time we've sneaked out, but never like this. I strain to hear the response on the phone. I don't want to leave this office when I don't know what's waiting for me outside.
"Yes, I think it will be safe. If we walk south, we won't be in range of the auditorium."
Farid stares at me while he listens to the instructions. He shakes his head, and I can imagine what they're saying. "Run if you can. Hide if you have to. Don't be a target." It's the first thing all the instructors of our lockdown drills taught us. Get yourself to safety. But what they failed to tell us is that running away and saving your own skin is only noble when you don't leave anyone behind. If I were in the auditorium, I'd want someone to come for me. I'd want there to be hope.
"Yes, we'll open the window and wait outside. Do you need me to stay on the line?"
Farid's hand trembles, and he nods at me once more before he says,
"Okay. Okay. We'll wait outside. Thank you."
Sylve. All sounds, all shouts, fade. My vision blurs, as if the connection between me and the rest of the world has been severed. The air is stale. It hurts to breathe. Autumn's whispers tug at me as her hands pull at my arm. I want to reach out to her. Hold me. Keep me safe. I am frozen. But Tyler's voice teases me. I cannot, I do not, want to deal with it. Not here, not now, not ever. All my worries rush over me. Mama's empty eyes, Abuelo struggling to keep the farm running while caring for her. My older brother's asking me questions I can't answer. Where will you be next year? What do you want to do? How are you? When I close my eyes, all I see are the faces of the two people who mean the most to me. The two people I both cling to and push away. My good-for-nothing, perfect-for-me brother, who somehow managed to get sent to the principal's office during the very first period of the first day of the semester, He's out there somewhere. I hope. I pray. And Autumn. Always, always Autumn. Tyler drove a wedge between all of us, though I could never tell them about it. Tomas would have torn him apart for me, and it would have destroyed what little family Autumn has left. The only things that give us purpose are the stories that tie us together. We all have so many secrets to keep, and I hold mine close. Before my junior year and her sophomore year, Autumn led me to an abandoned shed, the only remnant of a farm that once stood there, outside the town border. We'd meet between the cornfields every evening and share the day's gossip from neighbors, who always seemed to know everything going on in Opportunity. Last summer, the large shed began to double as her studio. Hidden in a blanket of gold under the thick August air, time was ours. During the day, she was whoever she wanted to be. When we were together, she showed me what dancing felt like. Until one evening, everything changed for good. The corn plumes seemed to be ablaze in the setting sun, and the high stalks kept prying eyes at bay. I worked on my college applications and watched tufts of early cotton float on the wind while Autumn danced. I didn't know what I wanted to major in yet. I didn't even know for sure I wanted to go to college. Not while Mama was getting worse every day. But for Autumn's sake, I filled out the forms. We'd always planned to go together.
Do you think the two of you sneaking out every night goes unnoticed? I thought I'd made myself clear.
I startled at the sound of the voice, and when I saw whom it belonged to, my blood ran cold. I hadn't seen Tyler since junior prom, when he pinned me against a wall and told me I was corrupting Autumn. He fiercely protected his sister from threats the rest of Opportunity didn't see, or, in the case of their dad, didn't want to see. He didn't trust anyone. It made him unpredictable, dangerous, and better left alone.
Go away, Tyler. You're trespassing. You can't tell me to go away. Back off.
I picked up my books from underneath the tree and stuffed them into my backpack.
Or go inside if you want to watch Autumn dance.
Tyler is the spitting image of his sister. Or rather, the other way around. They have the same straw-colored hair. His tucked behind his ears, hers still a little longer back then. With his suede jacket and his polished boots, he looked older than his 17 years. And beautiful, in a classic sort of way. The corners of his mouth curled into a slow smile. His hungry once-over made me cringe. I didn't wait for his answer, but slung the bag over my shoulder.
Tell Autumn I'll see her tomorrow.
I walked toward the edge of the cotton field, but Tyler followed me. He wasn't even subtle about it. He whistled some happy tune while his footsteps crossed my shadow, and his breath tickled the back of my neck.
I cared about her dancing. Once, before you took her away from me.
I didn't take anyone away from anyone, I snapped. He traced my arm with his nail.
Don't lie to me. You corrupted my sister.
He placed his hands on my shoulders again, his thumbs digging into my neck.
I don't know what you're talking about, I jerked, attempting to dislodge his grip, but he only squeezed harder.
I reached back, scratching at his hands, and hoped against hope that Autumn had heard his voice, would come looking for us. Maybe she would not dance all night. Maybe she wouldn't forget time. She always did. I dropped my bag and tried to stomp on his foot. He spun me by my arm. I stumbled, crashing to the plowed earth. He swept my feet from under me when I tried to get up.
This thing between you and Autumn, it's a disease. It's not natural. You think you can come into our lives and steal my family? You need someone to set you right.
Your family? I shot back, despair strengthening my voice. When is the last time you took an interest in Autumn? You don't know the first thing about family.
When I tried to roll over and crawl away from him, his boot found my stomach, and I doubled over. He pinned me, his knees on my arms and his hands on my shirt. When he leaned down, his breath smelled sour.
They abandoned me. They all did.
His grin stole the scream from my lungs. His finger traced my jawline. I couldn't move.
Next time your brother tries to get in my way, I will kill him. Remember that.
Tyler hovered above me while the sky turned purple.
And I will make sure you remember me.
I couldn't run then. I couldn't escape, no matter how hard I tried. I've been running ever since.
Remember.
And now he's found me.
Claire.
Thank you.
Chris says as soon as we're out of earshot from the rest of the group. My breathing is shallow. Running on the hard concrete rattles my knees. Although I don't need an explanation for Chris's hesitation, he gives one anyway.
School was always supposed to be safe.
He grasps for words.
I
nod. I know. Nothing ever happens here. Cars fill up the student parking lot, even though most of us take the bus to school. The route to and from Opportunity High is a single two-lane road. Behind the school's athletic fields, there is a forest, but in front of the school, the fields stretch out as far as the eye can see. Somewhere in the distance is civilization. Here, there is just flat, open land with a slate-gray sky overhead. Two cars sit at the entrance to the parking lot, Jonah's patrol car one of them. The white paint's so dusty it's almost gray, and scratches cross the navy blue school logo. I spent many hours in his front seat, my knees propped against the dashboard, munching away at one of the chocolate muffins Jonah brought to share. We met by accident last year when I missed the late bus home after Mom called to tell me Matt had been rushed to the hospital. Jonah got permission to drive me into the city. We talked the whole way, and his outrageous anecdotes were the pick-me-up I needed. When I thanked him a couple days later, we talked more. He told me he wasn't supposed to let students in his car because it could be seen as inappropriate. But he smiled before he protested, and it didn't sound very vehement. Eventually, I wore him down. After Matt was released from the hospital, he gave me one of his figurines to give to Jonah. It found a place of pride on his dashboard, and I found a place to get away to think. Away from Matt's precarious health and my sister's deployment, away from Chris, away from all the expectations. Jonah and I simply talked. It makes me feel safer now, knowing Jonah is close. Most students ignored Jonah. Parents grumbled about the invasion of privacy. But Jonah once told me he never minded being disliked as long as he could do his duty. I wish I felt the same. I slow to a trot, circling the car. From the outside, I can see it's empty. A paper cup from the local bakery sits on the dashboard. Jay? A second car is parked haphazardly across three parking spaces. This car I once knew as well as I know Jonah's.
Claire? Chris calls. Isn't this...
Yes. My voice trails off. It's been a while since I saw Ty, particularly because he dropped out. But I always expected him to come back. He cares too much about his education. He prides himself on following the rules even when others don't, no matter how ridiculous those rules might be. It's not like him to leave his car like this. But the muddy brown hood is popped. Looks like his car broke down. They must have gone to find help or get another set of jumper cables. I breathe. Ty's back. We're less alone. Despite everything that happened, Ty's good people. Break up or not, he always believed in me. He still smiles when he sees me in his father's store. He always asks about Matt. If he's inside, he'll protect Matt. And if he arrived after Trenton's speech, he'll be able to help us. He has to help us. Chris takes the lead once more, and I comfortably fall into step.
Then why wouldn't one of them stay here? Why wouldn't they take Jonah's car?
Chris asks. He edges to the passenger door, but Ty's car is locked.
Does Jonah have a mobile radio? I open the door to Jonah's car and peek in. The cold air closes in on me. His transceiver's missing. The wiring around the base station is cut. My heart slams into my throat. Chris! I turn around, but Chris has his face pressed against the window. He's as white as the frost on the grass.
Claire, there are ammo boxes in here.
What? I walk toward him and kick a shoe. I've inadvertently kicked my teammates' shoes all the time during warm-ups, so I don't even look down. Not immediately.
Gun cases, too,
Chris says, continuing to take inventory. I look to see what almost tripped me. Time moves in bursts today, cranking up to be impossibly fast, screeching to become painfully slow. And now it stops altogether. Jonah's boots, Jonah's feet, protrude from under the car. I crouch down, and when my fingers brush his socks, his ankles are cold. I place an arm on the concrete and lean to look under the car. There's blood on the ground. In the shadows of the car, Jonah lies at an unnatural angle. Empty eyes stare at me. I stifle a scream. Chris's voice trembles when he says,
Claire, I don't think anything happened to Tyler. I think Tyler is happening to us.
Autumn. Fear and survival are two sides of the same coin. Dad taught me that. These last 2 years, he proved it again and again and again. Terror is our strongest force because we're only afraid when we have something to lose. Our lives, our loves, our dignity. It's been such a long time since I felt afraid. But now Ty is here. My brother. My Tyler. His smile belies his gun, and we're all enthralled by it. Despite being 1,000 against 1, we are powerless. What would Dad say about that? Come here. I draw Sylve close and whisper assurances in her ear. Her eyes are wild and tears stream down her face. She whimpers unintelligible words, but she responds to my touch. Her breathing eases, as if her mind's slipping someplace safe. Wherever it is, I hope she stays there. Follow me. Trust me. I curl my fingers around her wrist and gently pull. Everyone knows Ty. Knows me. We need to move. The mood in the auditorium shifts. Dancing teaches you how to read people from the way they hold themselves, the way their hands clench when they're scared, the grand motions they make when they're excited, the threats and yearning in a stolen glance, and the brazen gestures of fear and fight and despair. Sylve? I pull her through our section of seats, toward the farthest corner from Ty, not waiting for Asha to make the same trek. Behind the last row of seats, we still cannot hide. The stares of those around us burn. The fingers of my free hand push the ballet shoe charm deep into my palm. Ty steps forward, and the door shuts behind him. As if we are in a vacuum, the silence in the auditorium intensifies. The world outside might cease to exist and we wouldn't notice. Tyler pulls a lock from his pocket and tosses it to a sandy-haired boy standing nearest to him, a skinny kid who almost drops it.
Be so kind as to lock this door.
The boy trembles. He takes a step, moving slowly, as if the lock weighs him down. He hesitates and the next shot drills through his shoulder.
Now!
Ty's voice echoes through the auditorium.
If you please.
The boy cradles his arm against his body. He stumbles. Students stare. We stare. We do not help. We do not fight. I don't speak up. It's self-preservation. The boy starts to crumple, and a mousy-haired girl reaches out to steady him. I think her name's CJ. She's a junior, too. She glances at Ty and the gun.
Everyone else who came too close has been shot. Tyler nods, graciously giving his approval. I guess it doesn't matter who locks us in, as long as someone does. CJ supports the boy as he weaves the chain with the lock through the door's handles. Their hands touch as the padlock clicks shut. We're trapped. The key tumbles onto the crimson carpet. CJ reaches down to grab it, as if by reflex, then freezes. Ty beckons with the gun.
Bring it to me.
She eyes the weapon and does not hesitate. We all hold our breaths to see what will happen to her. Nothing. He holds out his hand, accepts the key, and allows her to walk back to the boy she helped. Ty's voice fills the auditorium once more, his tone as casual as if he were discussing the frosty weather.
I have no issue with most of you, so I'd rather you don't force me to waste my bullets.
He's comfortable with our fear. He's feeding off of it. This is calculation. The gun, the locks, the date, the deaths. He has a carefully structured plan. My brother has always had a flair for the dramatic.
J. Ike, at J. Ike 32. Gun? WTF, hashtag OHS. 10:07 a.m. J. Ike, at J. Ike 32. Someone tell me what's happening over at hashtag OHS. 10:08 a.m. J. at J. Ike 32, to Kevin, at Kevin DR. Dude, what's going on there? DM me back. 10:08 a.m. Chapter 6, 10:10 to 10:12 a.m.
Sylph, the memories overwhelm me, and I wish I could forget like Mama, but the present isn't any better. The silence from the auditorium is tense and loaded, except it's not silence. All around me there are hushed sobs, prayers, and curses. Friends trying to calm each other. Hold on to my hand. Trust me. We'll make it through. People whisper into cell phones. Help me. I don't know what to do. We've got to fight. We've got to take him down. It's an endless current of fear, and Tyler revels in the power. He's the only one who does not feel lost right now. A cheerleader sits cross-legged on the floor between two rows of seats. Her bag lies in her lap, and she toys with a keychain attached to it. All the while, tears trickle down her cheeks. My hand creeps toward the phone in my bag. For the first time in months, I want to hear my brother's voice. But if he doesn't pick up, if Tyler found him, it will kill me. The kid in the row in front of us doesn't share my hesitations. Mom? No, I can't speak up. Mom, you have to listen to me. There's someone in the school. His voice trembles. No, I mean with a gun. There's someone with a gun in the school. Tyler, with a gun, I mentally correct. Not just someone. Tyler. He strides down the aisle toward the stage, apparently oblivious to the students who plot to stop him. He glances around, noting faces. Everyone keeps their distance, which gives him the upper hand. No, Mom. Mom, it isn't one of those friends of mine. Did you hear me? We can't get out. We're locked inside. CJ's okay. I thought he was going to shoot her. She's somewhere on the other side of the auditorium. His voice breaks. I reach out to nudge him to be quiet. He'll attract attention. He can't help his CJ if he's dead. Mom, I'm so scared. Halfway down the aisle, Tyler fires a bullet into the ceiling. Hasn't anyone ever told you people how rude it is to be on the phone when someone is speaking? He spins on his heel and pans the back of the auditorium. No matter what stands between us, I'm convinced his eyes find mine, like they always do. No matter where I go, no matter how far I run,
I can never hide from him. A smile tugs at his lips before he resumes his walk. The boy in front of me whimpers. His phone slides from his slack hands down under the seats. The voice on the other side fades.
Claire. No! No, there has to be another explanation why Jonah is lying dead under Ty's car. His sister borrowed Ty's car. There was an accident. Not Ty, it can't be him. Please. Chris pulled Jonah close to check his vital signs, but he shakes his head and closes Jonah's eyes. His gaze is troubled as he reaches out to me, but I back away.
Claire.
No, it can't be. I know Ty.
Are you sure about that?
Chris asks.
All the evidence points to the contrary.
Don't you trust me?
I don't trust him. He was never good for you.
Ty is a sore point between us. He always has been, and everything inside me rebels. Against Chris, against this situation, against my better judgment.
You don't get to decide that for me.
Chris steps toward me.
He lied to you.
I cannot accept this is Ty's doing. He believed in me when no one else did. He loved me. He may not always have been true, but he never lied to me.
Forget it,
I bite out. We have no time for this right now. Hopefully Coach will have gotten to the emergency phone, but if that isn't the case, we need to act.
We need to get to the gas station. We need to get help.
We could take Jonah's car,
Chris suggests. I didn't check to see if the keys were still in the ignition, but the thought of using the car with Jonah lying...
With Jonah gone? I can't. I have to get out. Out, out, out.
The sound of my footsteps on the concrete creates a soothing rhythm, and the road stretches out before me.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I keep count, like Coach would on the track.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Chris falls into step behind me. I tense. But with the pace set, my mind is free to wander.
You know you don't have to follow in your sister's footsteps, right? You could be more. So much more. Opportunity doesn't know how precious you are. Opportunity doesn't know a lot of things.
Ty stroked the palm of my hand. With my head against his chest, the words rumbled in my ear.
I won't let the army steal my girl and force her to be someone she doesn't want to be. You have dreams you should follow.
I gazed up at him. The black circle around his eye, souvenir of yet another fight, showed how little opportunity cared about his dreams. I knew his scars ran deeper than the bruises, but with me, he felt safe. And I with him. We sat in his car just outside the school grounds and stared at the empty road. The same road Chris and I are running down. Opportunity is a sleepy town. Some days, the only traffic these streets see are the cars going back and forth to Opportunity High. Even the gas station is half deserted and overgrown, with tumbleweeds and all. Matt used to call it a superhero headquarters in disguise. Ty once promised to take Matt there after hours, since Mr. Brown owns both the gas station and the hardware store on Main. Ty planned to tell Matt ghost stories and give him all the candy he could eat, and Matt would have loved it. He admired Ty as much as Ty loved hanging out with him. But that was before junior prom, before the breakup. That day, though, Ty still held me. We were oblivious to the future that was waiting for us. What is my dream, then? I asked. Trace and I'd shared the same dream for so long, it seemed almost ludicrous to think of some other fate. Ty wrapped his arms tighter around me.
I always thought you should teach. You love being with the underclassmen, and they look up to you.
He leaned forward and kissed the top of my head.
Besides, it'll keep you closer to me.
Cheeky, I poked Ty in his ribs. And what do you dream about? Taking over your father's store?
Maybe.
You know you could go anywhere. Be anyone you want. I know. He paused. I want us to build a home together.
Here in Opportunity?
One of the abandoned farms at the outskirts of town. It'll be quiet there, and protected. Somewhere we'll both be safe.
I smiled sadly, not wanting to deny him his dream. Almost everyone in our class talked about leaving Opportunity. But even though Ty wasn't happy here, he never did. Sometimes it felt as if he and I walked the same road, but each of us was going in a different direction. You've got it all figured out, haven't you?
I have. And one day, I'll show the world. And they'll never forget me. Ty. Showing the world. And now the school is his battleground.
No.
My step falters at the thought. Fear reaches out to strangle me as gravity pulls me down. Strong hands wrap themselves around my elbow, and Chris hoists me to my feet. I gasp for breath.
Don't think, don't feel, just run.
Chris's fingers twine through mine. I nod, feeling infinitely small. If I had breath left to speak, I would whisper a prayer to anyone who might listen. After 20-odd paces, my breathing steadies, but my pacing slows. My legs burn. After double the distance, I want to pull my hand away, but his hand squeezes mine. I squeeze back. We might not be able to beat this together, but we definitely can't face it alone.
Tomas. Farid walks back into the principal's office to open the windows. I sneak into the hallway and check the area. The long corridors are deserted. The doors to the counselor's office and the resource office are locked. Off the administrative wing are the doors to the quad, to freedom and safety. The main hallway leads deeper into the building, to the classrooms and the auditorium. The shooting has stopped. It's silent, and that terrifies me. We can't leave. The emergency dispatcher's advice is the only advice we have, but a strange sense of calm comes over me. Unless there's a second shooter, everyone's at the other end of the school, which means that for now, we're free to walk around. Farid walks up behind me. You're getting predictable in your old age, he comments. His natural accent has returned. We don't have to pretend around each other. Someone tells you not to do something. Figures you want to do it. Did you open the window? I counter. Both of them? I nod. We should open the front doors too, Farid says. We can't leave. Farid doesn't immediately reply, and I falter. Sylvia is in the auditorium. I have to help her. I can't sit back and wait. Not again. He catches my arm and forces me to look at him. For the scrawniest senior in the history of Opportunity, Far is surprisingly strong and surprisingly determined. I've never seen this side of him. If no one else is around, the doors of the auditorium must be locked, and we don't know if the shooter's inside or out. If you're set on going there, we'd better be prepared. I raise my eyebrows. Neil, the janitor, he says. We can get screwdrivers and hammers from his office. I believe you are more comfortable with tools than with paperwork. I put my hand on my chest and feign shock. You hurt me, my dear fellow. Such mundane activities are far below a man of my standing. In any other situation, Farid would have rolled his eyes. In any other situation, I would have grinned at his indignation. Today all jokes fall flat, though we keep trying. I stuff my hands in my pockets, tense all over. Good call. Yeah. He copies my gesture and legs it toward the south entrance. We stay close to the walls, pausing at every corner. When the next shot sounds, the echo is duller. I shiver. Who would do something like this? Farid stares at me, his face grim. Let's worry about that after we figure out how to deal with this, he says softly. There's a stoicism about him, but also a deep sadness. Has he lost relatives to war? I never thought to ask. Another thought strikes me. Far, when's the last time you were at one of Trenton's speeches? If I remember correctly,
Neil doesn't go to those things. He might be able to help us himself.
Farid doesn't slow his pace.
Yeah, maybe.
We turn the last corner.
The janitor's office fits snugly between the main entrance and the gym. Through the windows of the double doors, we can see slate skies overhead. It makes me long to be outside, to breathe the air, but the doors have been locked with heavy chains. There's nowhere we can go. The door to the janitor's office stands ajar.
Autumn. I liked it here once. Opportunity high. Opportunity. It sounds so hopeful.
Ty's spite makes me feel like throwing up my meager breakfast. This morning I felt so relieved that he was nowhere to be seen, even though I dreaded going to school alone. Especially today, of all days. But it was better than facing his unpredictable moods. My only focus has been to get into Juilliard early, and get through one last semester before both Sylve and I leave opportunity behind. It feels like I made those plans an eternity ago. I pull Sylve to the farthest door. It's not easy to move through the throng of students. I hesitate, torn between making sure she's all right and making sure we can run if we need to. There'll be no escape if we get caught in the crowd. I would reach over to push one of Sylve's long curls out of her eyes, but her hands clamp around mine, and I don't think she'll let go anytime soon. I don't want her to let go.
I wanted to fit in here!
His voice rises and falls with a sing-song cadence. He has the gun in one hand, his other rests on his waistband where, strapped over his dress shirt and slacks, he carries cartridges of ammunition, perhaps even another gun.
Instead, I lost everything.
Dad always used to tell me, he has a hunter's grace, that boy, and the instincts and speed to match it. Somehow, I don't think this is what he intended. The masses part in front of Ty. With every step he takes, the students around him scatter from the aisle, down the rows of seats, pushing themselves toward the sides of the room. Anything to increase the distance between them and Tyler. Together we could be so strong, but the gun has made us individuals.
All of you with your perfect lives, do you know what losing feels like? Do you care?
When he reaches the front row, Ty veers away from the aisle and climbs the steps onto the stage. His eyes remain ever watchful, scanning his audience. How many of us have heard him? From the wings, Mr. Jameson and three other teachers creep toward Ty's side of the stage. Are they going to try to circle him? I suck in a breath. They're underestimating him. Everyone always does. Our English teacher's hands are stained with Principal Trenton's blood. And I don't know what Ty wants, but if they try to stop him, this'll only get worse. Suddenly, Ty shifts his attention to the handful of people on stage.
If you cooperate, some of you might go home today. All you have to do is listen carefully to what I'm saying. No screaming, no running, no phones, and certainly no attempting to disarm me. Today, you'll all listen.
Two sis. Help me, we're trapped. Two sis. Claire, I'm so scared. He's shooting people. What do I do? Claire, please pick up. Chapter 7. 10:12 to 10:15 a.m.
Sylve. Hometown, family, God, country. That's the Opportunity Creed. It's preached by the mayor who can trace his lineage back to the Civil War. And the elderly farmers, like Abuelo, who linger outside church to discuss the crops and the weather. It's what makes our community strong, gives us purpose. Even with my ticket out, this is home. And I don't want to leave. The Brown family had been part of Opportunity for generations, but no more. When Mrs. Brown died, Ty raged against everyone who tried to help him. He wouldn't eat the food anyone brought.
He snarled at our sympathy. Still, the town forgave his grief. Until Mr. Brown drowned his sorrows in alcohol, and Tyler doused his in hatred. And after a while, opportunity took the withdrawal and the lashing out personally. The town stopped trying to bring them back into the fold. And we lost them. Autumn was the only one who didn't notice, and if she did, she didn't care. Now her eyes are fixed on Tyler. She's pale, but her eyes are fierce. She is so much stronger than people expect. She's not afraid. Not anymore. Not like I have been for months now. The only time she saw the same Tyler I did was when we spent the first night of summer together, and I told her Tyler found out about us at junior prom. "Do you think Ty hates us?" she asked. "He could never hate you." She plucked aimlessly at a dandelion in the grass. Her face was drawn. "He's been so angry. He doesn't seem to care about anything anymore." It was the first time she acknowledged her brother wasn't as perfect as she made him out to be, and the last time we talked about it. When I leaned against her, she winced and turned away from me. "What's wrong?" She tugged her shirt back in place, but not before I saw the bruises that spread across her shoulder. "I fell against one of the wooden posts in the shed, my arm's still sore." "Autumn, nothing's wrong." She crushed the flower between her fingers and looked straight at me, as if challenging me to object. Pity made me bite my tongue. She danced every spare hour, every moment she could get away from Mr. Brown. And she looked pale and wary. Ty was the only family she had left. Right there and then, I didn't want her to know how much he had changed, too. "Tyler may be angry at the entire rest of the world, but he could never hate you." Autumn seemed unconvinced. "You don't know him like I do." It was the truest thing she said that night, as we both lied to each other. I pushed my nails into my palm. Opportunity cast out Tyler, and by association, his whole family. But Autumn never noticed. She relished being alone. She didn't want to be bound to anyone. An opportunity severed her ties for her.
"Get back to your seats. I don't want anyone sneaking up on me."
Tyler's voice echoes across the room. Autumn squeezes my hand tighter. "Shh," she mutters absently, drawing me closer. "Stay here. Don't let him see you." Most of the students stay where they are, yet Tyler seems unperturbed. Then he turns back toward the stage, and the next bullet buries itself in the leg of one of the approaching teachers. She falls to the stage with a grunt.
"Get down," he says. "Get off the stage."
Mr. Jameson freezes, but neither he nor the other teachers move. Tyler fires another shot, this time at the remaining chorus members on the stage. They shriek. The teachers back away toward the front row. The teachers will be effectively trapped there, but given the choice between life and someone else's death, I wouldn't hesitate either.
"I love how attentive you all are now. Did you ever consider listening to me before?"
In a corner, Mrs. Noble, the new freshman history teacher, huddles against the wall. She only started teaching this year. I don't think this is what she had in mind. Her face is blotched. Her hair sticks out in all directions. The last teacher left on stage, Mr. Jameson, stands tall. He must be as terrified as the rest of us, but what strikes me most isn't the nervous tremor in his hands or the patches of sweat on his shirt. It's the genuine pain on his face. He keeps lifting his hands as if to reach out to Tyler, as he has with every student in each of his classes. He would have listened. We all hate to love opportunity high and love to hate it. We can't wait to graduate, but we don't want to leave. This school is special. From the stupid, bright red bricks that make the building look modern and out of place, to our school mascot, the Ocelot of Opportunity. But it's Mr. Jameson who makes this school even more special. Mr. Jameson, who knows the name of every single student in the school, who talks with us all about our dreams and futures, who is a better college counselor than our actual college counselor. Every year at the start of the spring semester, he builds a bonfire for the seniors in the field on the side of the school. It's tradition, and everyone gathers at midnight for him to read to us. A legend, a short story, a myth. After everyone's eaten themselves sick on marshmallows, he asks students to write their wishes on sky lanterns, and the wishes will be sent up to the stars, and whatever greater power we might believe in. Together, each class dreams about something bigger than this world we live in. It sounds corny as hell, but every year, all the seniors love it. Even Mr. Jameson's daughter, May, who demonstratively avoided her father's classes until graduation, raved about it last year. Because no matter who we are, we all dream. The ritual made Mr. Jameson a legend, and Opportunity High our home.
Mr. Brown, surely that's not...
Mr. Jameson starts. A ripple of murmurs goes through the auditorium. Please be silent.
Tomas. Far skids past me toward the double doors and tries to open them. The locks jingle against the fortified glass, and the sound echoes off the walls. A shiver of claustrophobia creeps up my spine, which is entirely unhelpful. Come on, I say a little too loudly. We don't know if there are other people outside the auditorium. Probably not. Most likely not. But we shouldn't risk it. With the toe of my shoe, I open the janitor's door and peer in. Neil is the only one fortunate enough to be exempt from Trenton's speeches. He wouldn't have been in the auditorium, but there's no sign of him. Did he go to the auditorium? Or to get help? I flick on the light switch. The fluorescent lamp bathes the room in an unnatural glow. And I falter. Neil is here. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe Neil tied to his chair, a rag stuffed in his mouth like you'd see in the movies, his eyes wild and his forehead sweaty from struggling against his bonds. He'd be furious but grateful when we cut through his restraints. Instead, he sits, leaning against one of his closets. His hands are bound together with a cable tie pulled so tight his fingers have gone black. Cable ties circle his neck, and he is gagged. His eyes are empty. His face is as discolored as his hands. Bloody scratches mark his neck, as if he tried to rip through the plastic with his bare hands. My ears ring and my stomach revolts. I reach for the garbage can where I puke until there's not a scrap of food left in my body. It doesn't make me feel any better. Oh my God! Farid backs away against the wall. He mutters something, but I can't make out the words. It sounds like a prayer of sorts in the language of his parents. I should probably pray too. Granddad would expect me to, but the sight of Neil's body has made me numb all over. I have to get to Sylvia. I have to get to the auditorium. I wipe my mouth on my sleeve. Get me the flag on that shelf, I tell Farid in a voice I barely recognize as my own. It seems we're both alternate versions of ourselves. I push Neil's eyelids down so he isn't staring anymore. His skin feels like wax, and part of me refuses to believe it's really him. Refuses to believe this is really happening. The rest of me demands action, right now. Farid hands me the flag. Opportunity's blue and crimson school logo, with the school motto in cursive underneath it. Together, we drape it over Neil's body so future covers his face. The shooter will either be just outside the auditorium or inside. We need whatever tools we can find for the locks, I manage. Cutters, crowbars, screwdrivers, pliers, wrenches, whatever Neil's got. Hell, hammers, too. If nothing else, we can use them to smash the windows to signal the police or to get out. Without waiting for me to finish speaking, Farid climbs on top of the janitor's desk to take down the toolboxes and the first aid kit from one of the shelves. I pull open a drawer and start looking for other materials. I somehow doubt Neil will have a set of lockpicks or a skeleton key, but paper clips will do just as nicely. Or a gun. This isn't about returning fire or self-defense. This is about revenge. If this guy hurt my sister or anyone else, I'll kill him. Slowly. Except we have school policies against having guns, for students and for staff. Even if Neil had one, in case of emergency, it would have been locked away in a secure location, and finding it, let alone accessing it, would take time we don't have. I stuff a handful of paper clips into my pocket and accept a bolt cutter and a collection of other tools from Farid. We'll have to do what we can and pray the police get here fast.
Claire, today is a nightmare. Any moment now, I'll wake up. If it weren't for Jonah, I could convince myself we imagined this. I could convince myself we didn't hear gunshots, but a microphone falling or a speaker short-circuiting. Tomorrow, we'd laugh at how we called the police and the National Guard over a technical malfunction. Trace would think it the world's best joke. Except I know what a gunshot sounds like. I know the difference between a microphone and a starting gun and a semi-automatic. I've seen death. I know this is real. I'll show the world, and they'll never forget me. The air burns in my lungs. The road stretches out in front of Chris and me, but it feels like we aren't getting any closer to where we want to be. 1, 2, forward. 3, 4, still to go.
Come on, Sarge, keep up.
My eyes sear with tears of anger.
Don't call me that. Don't ever call me that again.
Chris is temporarily dumbstruck. I take advantage of that, the words tumbling out of my mouth before I can stop them.
If this is Ty's doing, how did I not know? How did I not see him for who he really is? I thought we were always honest with each other.
Chris shakes his head.
How could you have known? Tyler is clever. He would have been careful. You can't blame yourself.
Ty told me he would make sure the world remembered him.
He told me, Chris. I could have done something about it. This never should have happened. I could have protected everyone. I should have protected Matt. I did nothing.
Chris's jaw tenses and his shoulders strain. He takes several deep, hard breaths and slows his pace. I match his steps.
Did Tyler ever tell you he planned to bring a gun to school?
Chris asks finally. I shake my head.
When he told you he wanted to get back at the world, was he angry?
After his mom died, Ty was always angry, I add. But he was never angry at me. He was always good to me. He listened, comforted, planned for our future. Ty always tried to find solutions. When I'd had a bad day and just wanted to break something, Ty would hold me and tell me things would get better. I trusted him, even if he never trusted his own reassurances. But yeah, he'd been in another pointless fight with Tomas and Farid. Don't make my excuses for me, Chris.
I'm not.
For a step or two, he's silent, his breathing labored.
You know, I always imagined we'd run our last race together, like our first race. Do you remember that? I'd forgotten my running shoes, but instead of borrowing a pair for tryouts, I figured winning all my races in middle school entitled me to a place on the team. We were both convinced we were amazing runners. I still don't know what Coach saw in us.
At least I brought the right shoes, I protest flatly. The corner of Chris's mouth quirks up.
You were 10 minutes late.
That was the day Trace enlisted. She called to tell me, and I locked myself in a bathroom stall to talk her through her nerves.
That was the first time I lost a race. Every other time I lost on purpose. Not because you weren't good enough to beat me, but because you are. You are so much better than me, and some days running is all I have. If I lose, I want it to be on my terms.
But knowing you were near me kept me going.
He hesitates.
You can live up to anyone.
I turn to stare at Chris, but he's focused on the road ahead. The stammer of my heart has nothing to do with fear now.
I always thought you were generous, that you let me win to make me feel better.
That was what made us the best of friends from the start, ever since that very first day. If Ty hadn't paired up with me in English, if he hadn't asked me out first, perhaps I would have figured out if Chris meant something more. But I never thought he wanted to be more than just friends. Chris's fingers brush mine.
I never thought you needed to win to be perfect.
Autumn. The entire auditorium is fixated on the two people on stage. The rows of seats at the front of the auditorium are empty, except for a handful of teachers. Everyone has found a way to move away from Tyler. He stands in the spotlight at the center of our universe. And I should be more afraid. But I refuse.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Jameson tries again. He takes a hesitant step forward.
Listen!
Ty swings the gun to the side. A loud shot reclaims the silence. From here, I can't see if he's hit anyone. I don't even know if he knows, let alone cares.
The time for talking has passed! Move!
He waits for Mr. Jameson to comply, and then continues firmly.
Now!
Mr. Jameson looks gray, and there are dark patches of sweat on his shirt. He nods, but lingers on the steps. Ty's finger eases off the trigger, and his shoulders relax.
Now then.
Good.
It shouldn't be too complicated.
Tyler stands with his back to the far wall so no one can sneak up on him.
To survive, you must know who your friends are. You must know who you can trust. And you must know how to stop caring.
The auditorium is still, everyone too scared to speak. People huddle together, arms wrapped around shoulders, fingers entangled. Ty flashes a comfortable smile. A smile I'd seen only a couple nights ago, when he dangled my ballet shoes in front of Dad. Let it slip, I was still dancing. His smile was just like Dad's. Cold. And Ty stood by while Dad showed me that the love he once had for dance, for me, died along with Mom. I rub the back of my neck and try to ease the tension. Yesterday, Ty swore it was an accident. He laughed through his tears. We need each other, he said, because we had no one else. When he tended my bruises, he told me he'd take care of me, told me he'd forge a doctor's note because it'd be better for me to stay home. He promised there was nothing that made him happier than to see me dance. It reminded him of when Mom was alive, and we'd go see her performances. He said that even though he'd never felt the extremes of Dad's anger, he'd already lost so much. We both had. I believed him. I wanted to believe him. He's my brother.
Where are my former classmates? Raise your hands.
Ty's voice drops, and it makes the hair on my neck stand up straight. A few people tentatively raise their hands. Most stay crouched down. It feels like inviting death to speak up, but Ty is all seriousness. His eyes narrow, and his next shot makes me jump.
Bang! You cowards. Hands!
More seniors raise their hands. I squeeze Sylves tighter to make sure she doesn't.
Much better.
It's like this is some messed up game of Simon Says, and perhaps it is to Ty. After all, with one simple question, he's located most of the senior class. Everyone he despises. Letting the gun dangle by his side, he takes a few casual steps toward the edge of the stage.
Did you miss me? I always wondered what made you decide I wasn't good enough. No matter.
He turns on his heel and raises the gun in one fluid motion. Without a second glance, Without so much as a blink, he pulls the trigger and shoots Mr. Jameson. The first bullet buries